This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast. This is the show where I talk to my guests about the benefits of sobriety and the things that they've found or that they're doing that they'd never have done as a drinker. We talk a bit about their sober journey and how they got sober, but we also focus on why they enjoy staying sober. And today I've got the pleasure of talking to Will about his sobriety. Will, hello. It is so lovely to meet you. We were going to meet you in London, weren't we, when I was doing the 10K?
Yeah. Time ran away, literally, that day.
It did. And did you do what I did in the morning and wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning going, why am I doing this? It's absolutely tipping down.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And it was then I ended up having too many layers on for the actual run. And because it was beautiful, wasn't it? In the end, it was a lovely day.
So to start with then, let me ask you about your sober journey. How long have you been sober? Tell me anything you'd like to.
I just checked before I logged in. It is 1,198 days today.
Wow.
It's interesting, really. And I think I've said to you before on Instagram that I feel sometimes a little bit of a imposter in these sort of spaces because for me, it was never a problem. It was a good friend of mine who's actually been on the podcast before, Sam Phillips. He was very open about his recovery and his struggles. And that made me sort of, I think, become a bit more in tune as to maybe why I drink or whatnot. And there was one day in particular, it was a bit of a perfect storm. I'd had a terrible day and a terrible job. The kids were typical kids at bedtime, not wanting to go. And it was, I remember coming downstairs, reaching to the fridge and thinking, I need a beer. And then just sort of caught myself and thought, hang on a moment, that's probably not a good coping mechanism. And then you can then sort of see the timeline open up as to how things could become a problem down the line. And from that, it was like a seed planted. And that was probably midway through the year of 2021. And the more I sat with it and thought, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do 12 months. I'm going to have a year with no alcohol and see what happens. And when I say sort of a year without alcohol, I'd probably go out 2 or 3 times a year. But my problem was knowing when I'd had enough and not offending people or feeling horrendous physically and mentally for days afterwards. It wasn't like I was giving up a lot of drink, but it was just that coping tool and that way of letting your hair down, that they say. I got about 3-4 months in, started to think more about my historical use of alcohol. And then I heard the phrase alcohol misuse rather than alcoholism or whatever we want to call it. And then, I started to see, actually, maybe that's a bit more accurate for how I feel. And I got about 6 months into that and decided it doesn't add anything to my life. It doesn't bring anything to it. So that 12 months got scrapped about halfway into the year, and that just ended up being, this is it now. I don't drink, I'm sober. Quite freeing. The first of everything, like the first wedding, the first birthday party, the first funeral, all of those things that you normally drink at, got a little bit more, had to think about. And it was actually the leading up to it that was the bigger problem for me. Once I was at those things and I told someone, I don't drink. That was it. It was I'm not drinking today, or I'm not drinking at the moment, because that then opens up their option to say, well, just have one, or why not? But when I said I don't drink, sort of closed the conversation, and a lot of people were like, okay, no worries, and just carried on with their day, which was quite nice.
So When you say that you sort of would go out just a couple of times a year, was that the only times you drank then, or would you drink at home?
I'd probably drink at home, but it would only ever be one or two cans at home. It would never be getting to the point of being drunk or sloppy, and it would always be after the kids had gone to bed, or maybe like one or two throughout the day if it was a nice day, those sort of typical sort of times. But yeah, the point that I drink to excess would only ever be if I was going out, and that'd
Yeah.
invariably end up not good, not knowing that line, being sensible, like those few people that can moderate. I was never one of those.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's that everybody is so different. This liquid, this thing we have this relationship with, it's never straightforward. Somebody may look at you and think, "Oh, well, you didn't have an issue with alcohol. Why stop completely?" But
Yes.
you have said that you didn't have an off switch when you started. It didn't matter that it was only a few times a year, and that when you were drinking at home and it was only a couple of beers,
Yeah.
why would you say you were drinking? You said you noticed that change when it was like, "I need a beer." What were you saying to
Yeah.
yourself? How often were you having those beers, maybe in the week, that kind of thing?
I think I'll go back many years ago. It was before I had kids. I was working full time in the sort of gym industry, and I ended up being very short staffed and being off for about 3, 4 months in the end with work related stress. And that was then one of my telltale things was actually I was drinking a bit more when I got home from work as that sort of switch off. So I think after that, I became a bit more aware, almost qualifying it. Am I stressed? Is that why I'm drinking? But I think it is, as you've said many times before, it is just that normalized, it's the end of the week, or it's been a long day, just going to have a beer to unwind, to relax. So I don't think it was ever, it may well have been, oh, it's been one of those days, I need one. But it wasn't until that sort of light bulb moment when I recognized it that I really sort of became more aware of that. So I think it was pretty much the same sort of that end of the week. I've worked hard. I deserve to relax. Whereas actually,
All those same triggers, isn't it? All those same things
absolutely.
we say. Yeah. So we
Yeah.
say those things like, "Oh, I need to relax," or "I deserve it," or "I've had a hard week," or like you say, the kids are playing up at bedtime, "I've earned it." And it's this idea that alcohol is this reward.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you say you're in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
How did that
Yes.
sit with you? And I'm just intrigued. There's no judgment here, but how did
Yeah.
it sit with you?
No.
Because I mean, I would have said I liked the gym and I liked being fit and I liked doing all of those things as a drinker, but I always inherently felt this kind of slight mismatch. I knew what I
Yeah.
needed to do, but being in the industry, what's it like?
I think it's changed a lot since I left it. So I left just after my daughter was born. So it's just over 9 years ago that I left. And I think it's seen just as part of life, isn't it? It is part of that balanced approach to things where it's back then, it wouldn't have even been considered to be sober or to not drink. And I've been guilty of it with meeting people that say they don't drink and thinking, yeah, but why?
Why?
And so, yes, yeah, why would you do that? It was never thought of. I was very much one of those maybe do as I say, not as I do type people. But it was also, like I say, it is seen as part of a balanced approach to life, isn't it? Unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's that word, balance, isn't
Yeah.
it? And that's what we're told we're supposed to balance this idea of health and well-being and eating well. And then with this. Now you step back from it, you can see it for what it
Oh,
is. It's a toxin.
absolutely.
The messaging is so weird. I would say in this country, but it's not, it's worldwide. This idea that this has to be an essential part of life. And then, you know, those studies that came out of that one study in particular about red wine being good for you in a moderate amount.
Yeah.
What a poppycock. I mean,
Oh, absolutely. You can get just the same nutrients from good whole foods.
or grapes.
And the amount that you'd need to consume would be considered a completely different problem. And it is to justify the consumption of it, isn't it? And it's to make
Yeah.
people buy more, which unfortunately, when you take that big step back, that is what it's all geared towards, isn't it?
It's quite a moment, isn't it? I listened to a podcast this week, the Sober Awkward podcast, and there was a
Okay.
lady on there, Anna, who talked about the advertising industry and the marketing of alcohol. And it was a fascinating episode. She was in London, and it was a very drink steeped kind of industry. You were expected to go out and schmooze clients, and every ad agency wanted an alcohol brand in their portfolio, you know. And she was saying it's about selling the concept, selling the lifestyle, selling this identity. So you've got like a massive billboard that she was talking about of Roger Federer with all of these bottles of champagne around him. And he's looking cool and sophisticated in his tux. And it's all about selling this image. Don't you want to be like Roger Federer?
Yes, yeah.
And how many times did I look at somebody that I admired that, I don't know, looked fit and healthy and happy and
Yeah.
think, well, they're drinking, so it must be okay.
Yes. Yeah, rather than maybe they're just paid to stand there and have their photo taken next to these things. But when you're in it, it's not until you, like you say, step back and you can see it for what it is remarkable, isn't it?
It really is. So tell me a little bit about how you start. What age were you when you started drinking?
Probably around about 14, I'd say. And that was maybe a little bit before then at Christmas. Have a one of those small, stubby French bottles of beer at Christmas time or whatnot. But actually, the time I really remember was being about 14, having a friend that looked much older that could go into the local co-op and buy us several bottles of £1 cider. And just, yeah, being in a field nearby, drinking to that for no real rhyme or reason because it was the done thing. It was sort of making us feel a bit more grown up and, yeah, maybe a little bit rebellious. Not sure. It wasn't until, like I say, that first year of looking back and I realized, well, actually, maybe that was also a bit of self-soothing, a bit of self-medicating because there was a lot going on in life at that time to sort of blot out and self-medicate from, to switch off from, to not think about. So actually, again, 20 years down the line of looking back at it, thinking, oh, hang on, maybe it wasn't just because it was cool and the done thing, it was an off button
Yeah.
almost to not think about those things that were going on.
And I wonder how many people look back at their early drinking and think, do you know what? Maybe that was to help me cope with adolescence, friendship groups, or
Yeah,
whatever else was going on at the time.
absolutely. And I think it has been really that first year where I really looked at why I was drinking, why I'd get to that point of drinking. And it was actually, well, the people that I used to go out with on a Friday, Saturday night were a completely different friendship group to what I'd normally be with. They were the football lads, and I've never kicked a ball in my life. And it was actually going to watch football, which doesn't interest me. And like, actually, maybe it was then just to fit in. And I
Yeah.
always said it was just to get me in the mood, help me relax. But no, it was actually just to fit in a group that I wasn't, didn't feel myself in. And I think that's one thing that has helped this time round when I've been going out with those groups that I'd normally go out with a couple of times a year. They're people that I truly feel I can be myself with. And then because of that, I don't need this facade or this alcohol to make me feel like I can say the things that I'd normally say because they know me and I feel myself around them anyway. So I think it's all stems from not feeling myself, not feeling comfortable in my own skin throughout those years. And that, I think it did continue for a while until I got into my 30s and thought, you know what? I'm not going to change. This is me. And like it or lump it, really. I'm not going to try and change myself with this toxin just so that you feel a bit more comfortable around me.
Yeah, and we do, don't we? We don't have that
Absolutely.
confidence when we're younger. We don't have,
No.
wow, it would be some sort of teenager that would be able to say, this is me. I don't know, actually, these days, teenagers are a lot more
Oh,
confident in who they are, which I think is amazing. But certainly when I was
absolutely.
growing up, you didn't. It was like you wanted to fit in. You didn't particularly want to stand out. I even fashion-wise, you chose a trend and you stuck with it. You try and fit in. And
Yes.
alcohol is a part of that. It's a massive part of that. What decade was it that you were growing up then as a teenager?
So I was born in 88, so I was a teenager in the early noughties.
So it was like the early noughties. So did you notice that culture, that kind of, I mean, we look, I always look at it from a female perspective, ladette culture. But
Yeah.
from a male perspective, there was a lot of pressure, wasn't there, to be the man, to drink the pints.
Yeah, to drink loads after work, depending on what you've been doing, to go out, down loads over a weekend, and then ultimately to try and be this sort of Lothario that could do whatever. And sort of that was, yeah, that culture and fills you with shame and dread to look back on how things were back then and how I was back then when I was sort of 18 to 20 odd, embarrassing and cringeworthy. But it's the idea of doing it now is, well, no, at the point of it being too busy and too loud to want to do any of those things.
Yeah, exactly. I think what's absolutely fascinating is that on this podcast, I get people that were heavy drinkers or that were sort of weekend drinkers, didn't have an off switch drinker, blackout drinkers. I think it's absolutely wonderful to get this viewpoint that actually you don't need to get to a place where it's really obviously unhealthy for you before you stop.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the that thought of it having to be a problem before it's a problem. And I then think people can easily move the goalposts with those things of, yeah, well, I might have lost my driving license, but that was only because I was a bit over from the day before, or this relationship might have crumbled, but it wasn't just because of that. And I think it's that perpetually changing the parameters of what counts as a problem. And I think for me, that day that, as I say, I reached for the fridge thinking I need a beer, when it was almost this, as I say, that timeline that opens up and you can see, well, actually, it could get to that point. I then felt it would be irresponsible to carry on, to think that I'm the exception to that. Just because I've noticed it doesn't mean that it's never going to get to that. It could never get to that point.
I think that's amazing, Will. I mean,
Thank you.
but I wish
Yeah.
I'd caught myself at the point that I could tell alcohol was no longer a choice. I felt like
Yeah.
I was telling myself it was a choice, but it wasn't really. I was using it to self-soothe. It was a massive habit. I sulked if I took a night off. That was my biggest clue.
Right.
But I didn't
Yeah.
stop at that point. Whereas you're sort of almost going, I'm so hyper aware of my thoughts. I'm realizing that I'm telling myself I need that beer, and that's enough
Yeah.
red flag for me.
Yeah, and I think it comes from during the second lockdown, so the January when it was really miserable, it wasn't nice outside. I got redeployed to a care home to work, and at that time I thought, right, do you know what? I'm going to start doing these things to try and help with my mental health. I'm going to start walking more. I'm going to journal every day. The cold water showers at the time, all of those things I tried to put into place, and it was the journaling that really stuck first try. And I think it was just that then, because of the journaling, being a bit more aware of these thought processes and not just plodding and sort of treading water. So I think it's that was, like I say, about 18 months earlier. So I think that is to ultimately to thank for it, because I was just a bit more aware of how things were working for me or not working.
I mean, I'm beaming here because I sort of bang on constantly about journaling and how effective it is. And I think sometimes people think, well, I don't really get it, or I don't understand why it's so effective. And we've got all these thoughts bubbling away all the time.
Absolutely.
We're not aware of them, but they are impacting on a subconscious level how we then feel and act. And so you've got to bring them into awareness, but it really does make a difference. It makes you more aware. And I liken it to sort of stepping back and treating your life a bit like you're a scientist almost, or you're
Yeah.
becoming curious about things. So I wonder why that is. I wonder why I'm thinking that.
Yes,
and
yeah.
can change things like you did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of the time, I think maybe especially from men, are seen as this sort of dear diary today. And I think it's that sort of thing when actually I've got a list of things that I'll try and track each day.
Yeah.
And then from that, you can see, I know that if I were to miss my cold water therapy first thing in the morning, I'm less likely to walk at lunchtime. I'm less likely to read in the evening. I'm less likely to fill in my journal that day, all from a bit of cold water. And then from that, in that first year of doing it, I also knew that if I had a few drinks over the weekend, I wouldn't do any of those things for at least 4 or 5 days afterwards. And then you can feel
Wow.
it sort of burbling up again. So actually, it is what I lose from those few days, or from those few hours of apparently enjoying myself for the whole week, how it affects me is, yeah, significantly different. And I think there's a guy, Jay Alderton, that talks about journaling quite a lot, but he says your brain's for thinking, not remembering. And
Yeah.
it's a
Oh, love
great
it.
little reminder, yeah, to yeah, get it all down. And I think this is number five or six that I've been through. So
It's working for you.
it is, yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong, there's probably maybe 10 days to 2 weeks in a year that I won't do it. But then I've got good this year at sort of unpacking why maybe I didn't do it on those days, and some uncomfortable feelings around those days as to why I don't want to, didn't want to admit or put those things down on paper. So
Again,
actually,
what
it's not just,
self-awareness, isn't it? That's amazing self-awareness.
it's taken a lot of work in sort of various men's groups and spaces and whatnot, but I feel like for the most part, it's, yeah, something I couldn't be without now.
And is the journaling something that you do? It sounds like you have sort of a ritual or routine to your day, which I'm a big fan of. Is that
Oh,
something
yes,
you do
yeah.
at the same time each day or?
Yep, before bed every day, I'll sort of unpack to see, like I say, what my overriding mood has been that day, how many steps I've managed, what exercise I've done, whether I've read, how hydrated I am, cold water therapy, what sort it's been, just to keep a view. So then I can go across the tables and say, well, actually, I didn't do that, and this is how I felt because of it, or I didn't do
Yeah.
this. And it's, yeah. So it's at the end of the day to sort of review on that day and then list a few gratitudes, a three-word check-in simply of what my moods are and how I'm feeling, some goals for the next day or the next week, depending when I'm doing it. And then maybe two or three sentence check-in about something I need to get out of my brain from that day. And it that before bed, followed by a bit of reading, absolutely perfect. My sleep has never been better.
That is brilliant. I love
Thank
it. And so, do
you.
you
Thank you.
have? I'm intrigued about the journaling because I always
Yeah.
love to hear how different people do it. And I think
Yeah.
people listening will appreciate that as well. So, do you
Yeah.
have like an overview? You said you look at your table. Do you have like a table where you tick the days and you go, yep, I've drunk my water that
Yeah.
day and I've exercised? I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've got
Are
like
you color it in?
habit tracking things, yeah, so different colors for different things. But
And again, then you
what
can
I've done,
see and correlate like a mood dip. Well, I didn't do my cold water, or I didn't.
yes, yeah, and this, yeah, it sort of goes on for a few different pages, and
Wow.
then
And that's a blank
yeah,
diary, isn't it? You've drawn all that in.
yes, yeah, that is the biggest bit of the time. The week between Christmas and New Year is filling this in for the following year. And then each month, I'll do like a little review of the previous month. And then every quarter, I'll check in to see what my goals are for the year, how I'm progressing towards what they are. And it's, yeah, it's really nice, especially when it falls on like a Sunday morning for the end of the month, sitting with a coffee, just taking an hour to check in and see how things are going is really good. I think it's, that's it. It's checking the map for where you want to get to at the end of the year. You wouldn't blindly just go to a route that you've not been to. And
Yeah.
if it's something that you don't, if it's a destination you don't need a map to get to, then you're not changing yourself enough.
So let's talk about your three things then. Thank you so much for going into your journaling,
No
because
problem.
I think everybody's different. Some people like a pre-written structure, and some people like to create something themselves. I must admit, I'm more of your way of thinking. I will tend to like draw tables and color them in different colors, and then you can just see it. So I think we're sort of kindred spirits on that one. But
Absolutely.
let's move on to your three things that have altered for you in sobriety since stopping drinking. What's your first one?
I think the first and probably one of the biggest for me is my mornings. I've reclaimed mornings. I was never a morning person before. Even after I had children, it was still a real slog. It would take me a couple of hours to wake up. And since, and admittedly, this has probably been more so in the last year to 18 months since starting running. Unfortunately, I'd say unfortunately, I love it now. Yeah, the mornings to me are now a much more precious time. And it's, I don't know, I think I said to you a week or two ago now that they end up being that time when no one else is awake. And it's time for me to have a coffee, read. I've even played the PlayStation for an hour before anybody's got up or gone out for a walk or a run. It is just that, yeah, that time, that little gift to me to set me up for the day and being able to then be there and be present for everything else, be at work, be at family, whatnot, just having that time in the mornings. And it's actually, there's a lot more natural now. Before, I had about 8 weeks off with an injury, so I couldn't run at the start of this year. But end of last year, early January, I was waking up without fail every Tuesday at 5 a.m., no alarm, and I was out running by 1:30, and it was amazing. It was dark, no one around. Yeah, my favorite time of the week. I think that's one of the big ones for me.
So running's quite a new thing for you, isn't it? A bit like it was for me. How did you get into
Yes, yeah.
that?
Well, I used to run, looking back again, 17, 18, I used to run a lot going through my A levels. And looking back, it was quite a way of coping with stress. But then I convinced myself over the years that I didn't like running. And that was because I wasn't consistent with it. And really frustratingly, being consistent has made some incredible gains for it. But it was all down to Michael catching me at the right time last year where I wanted to do something to challenge myself, something that I normally wouldn't. And he said, oh, Alcohol Change UK are looking for people to run this 10K. Would you be up for it? And I foolishly said yes. And much through gritted teeth, I have got to thank him now, because it is, I'd say those 2 to 3 runs a week are my favorite times.
And
But
it
I'm
was
not doing the
a start.
marathon.
You're
It
not.
was, yes.
So,
I'm
I
not
mean,
doing the marathon in September, no. It keeps trying, but I'm not going to fall for that again.
we're talking about Michael, happy without the hooch there, who
Yes,
also convinced me to run the 10K in London for Alcohol Change UK, which was, again, just such a monumental experience. It was amazing. Did you pretend? I pretended I was running the London Marathon as I was stood on the
I
mall.
felt like I was, yeah.
I
Felt
actually
like
never
I'm
felt
running
like
down
that.
that bit.
Yeah. It was that last stretch, where they're marking it out, and then they're marking it out in meters as you come back up to Buckingham Palace. And
Oh,
oh God, that was painful.
it
Painful, but
was.
really, it was just an experience. I loved it.
It was, and that was, my wife had texted me to say that we're down near the 200-meter sign. And what I didn't realize until the day was actually a friend of ours, their son, 9, 10, had started running and was really enjoying running. They traveled down as well. So as I ran past, his dad and him were stood with my wife and kids. Absolutely incredible. And it felt like, yeah, such a huge achievement to be down there, to have them watching. Oh, incredible. It felt like it may as well have been a marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10K's quite a distance.
Oh,
Now you're
it's
probably thinking like, I can do that now. I can do 10K quite, because you obviously get better and better, don't you? And it's like 10K is a
as
heck of a distance when you're coming at it from nothing.
absolutely. I look back to, it was about May or June last year, I did my first run in years, and it was a 2 kilometer, and I ached for several days afterwards. But Now, and even training for the 10K, I wouldn't say I was overly consistent.
Yeah.
However, since October, the month after the run, it's gone up, and now it's, I say that's probably my favorite distance to run. And it's my favorite one to do. They'd say if it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you, don't they? But I think I put a post up, it's probably a few months ago now, but looking at how at 18, I wouldn't have imagined not being hungover on a Sunday, let alone being up at 6 a.m. comfortable and happy. And then add into that, I was out doing a 10K at the time. It's just baffling. But yeah, I'd take that any day over the feelings I used to have.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And with kids, I mean, it's not the same, is it? You can't, yeah, when you're in your 20s and you haven't got kids, you can kind of put your head in your hands and maybe go for a greasy fry up and,
Yeah.
sit watching rubbish on TV all day, just waste the day. But when you've got children, they're bouncing all, apart from the fact they're bouncing all over you, but they need you. They want you.
Yeah,
It's the one
and
day or two days of the week that they're home with you.
it is again that sort of the guilt that can come with it when you then think, you know what, it's almost abandonment. I might be here, might be with you, but I'm not here. It's all right if you're both at home and one of you is able to do that, but then you feel guilty for not doing that side of things. And if it's actually the other parents out and you're there just feeling sorry for yourself, it is. I think it just sets up their standards for future life, doesn't it? And what they see, they mimic and expect.
Yeah. What great sort of habits you're teaching them. Cold water therapy,
Yeah.
journaling. What an amazing start. So I don't
Yeah.
want to encroach on one of your later benefits of sobriety.
That's all right.
Tell me about the cold water. Is that one of your benefits as well, or is this could this be linked to this?
It's not actually one of my benefits because it's been there for that bit longer. I'll admit the first time I tried it, it didn't work very well. And that was because I tried it in a cold shower and I had hair down to my shoulders at the time. And I turned the hot off, put the cold all the way on, took a step back, and then I walked in forwards, head down, and the cold hit me. I shocked my wet hair, then wrapped around my face and sort of made me feel like I couldn't breathe. And really panicked me. I didn't try for about 2 months again after that because it really shocked me. But the next time I tried it, I went in backwards, kept my face out of it. And it was difficult. But I mean, I carried on with the daily cold showers for just under 18 months. And then it just wasn't doing enough for me. And there was one day, just I need full submersion. I needed to go into the sea. And then how much better that was. I then got one of the pods for the garden. So there's no excuse. It's not a 10-minute drive. It's not traipsing sand everywhere. It's straight in the garden, in and out. And yeah, pretty much every day now for coming up for 2 years, I've been doing that.
I feel like it's a rite of passage when you go sober. You've got to try cold water therapy. And I haven't. And I mentioned that I haven't quite a bit on here.
Yeah.
But it keeps flagging up. I have tried the switching the shower to cold. Consistency, isn't it, that's going to make the difference.
It is. And I think it's the problem now. The showers are really difficult for me because the problem with a shower is you get really good at, you get used to being where you are, but you move a fraction and it
It's
touches a
cold.
different part of your skin, you restart.
Yeah.
And to the extent it's the same in the sea because the water's constantly moving, you don't get that thermogenic sort of barrier around you. But it is just sitting in the pod. Getting you that sort of panic, it takes your breath away. But then just coming back to that breath, focusing on nothing but breathing, there's nothing like it. It's sort of like a mute button for all of that static and that head noise. As soon as I'm in, my head goes under, that's gone.
Yeah.
So I'd highly recommend it.
You've explained that really well about the shower, because that's kind of what I feel. It's like you move slightly and it's like, oh, I'm starting again. And I can understand it. Maybe on holiday or something, I'll go in the pool early in the morning, maybe try and do it that way.
Yeah.
Just to, I am going to do it just because I've heard it's so good for dopamine. And I'm on a bit of a dopamine seeking mission this year. That's my challenge to myself. Where can I find my dopamine?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that is a really good, I'd say easily accessible source of it.
Yeah, mentally not easy to like stand in
No.
front of cold water.
I find that's because I do the videos of my dips. And if ever you'll notice that the ones of me getting in and under, that happens very quickly. Because the times that I've gone in and stood there and then thought, right, now we'll go under, that takes. If I stand and delay or hesitate for half a second, I'm
Yeah.
then there for at least 20 seconds before I get under. Whereas if I get in and under before that voice up here has got a chance to slow me down, then I'm fine. But it's just that beating that voice is what it's all about for me, reminding it who's actually in charge.
And again, what great self-control that mentally, I mean, that sort of like chattery voice that can take over. We need to be the boss. We need to notice what it's doing and shut it up. So, what a brilliant way of
Absolutely,
doing it.
yeah, it is, and it's like I say, 2 years. It still doesn't get easier, and there are days where I'll walk around the garden for a little while beforehand, or I'll just make sure the angle of the video is completely right before I get in. They happen less often now.
Well, I had to mention the cold water, obviously, given that you do it every day and you post it. Is it every day you post on
Yes.
Instagram as well? Is that your kind of your accountability?
Yes, yeah, it was because last year it was every day of the year challenge. I'm going to post it and I'm going to do it fully and consistently because it makes such a difference. And then that sort of, I had a little bit of time off the videos when I wasn't doing the year challenge. But then it was like, well, if I'm not posting a video, do I really need to get in it? Because no one's going to know. And then it was like, well, actually, no, because then that battle starts to happen. And then you think, you know what? I don't need to do it. I'm all right today. So actually, posting the videos is a way of giving me that kick up the backside to do it.
That's exactly what I did with Sober Instagram. And in that, I thought if I post every day about my sobriety, it's holding me accountable because then I'd have to go back in. And I did a few times and say, right, day one again,
Yeah.
and then day one again. And that's why I've left those up on the early days of my account because
Yeah.
that happens for a lot of people. It isn't always clean cut. But
No.
it did help me. It was that additional barrier when that little voice kicks in and goes, well, who's going to know?
Absolutely. It does. And like you say, it isn't just a right. Today's the day for everybody, and where the journey's so different for everyone. It's very easy to look and go, yeah, but you've been doing it for so long that we can forget that everybody started with the first time that was very difficult with doing it.
So you say you started cold water when you were still drinking. Did you notice that the drinking was that one of those habits that you just did not do if you were hungover or after drinking at the weekend?
Yeah, pretty much it would be one of those things that would then not, because it would be the last thing I wanted to do was stand under a cold shower if I was feeling terrible.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then it was sort of more than looking at how the blocks fall down. If that first step of the day isn't in place,
Yeah.
all of the other ones that follow it then just didn't happen because I've not done step one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really, again, taking that step back and looking and saying, well, actually, the only thing that was consistent that week was that I was hungover, which is why none of the other things happened.
And so actually underneath those daily foundation steps at the start of the day in your morning practice is the foundation stone of sobriety, which sits underneath all of it, which means that those first steps happen in the first place and then it sort of trickles down into the day.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. And then I decided after in that first year was right, I'm going to set myself some goals that will actually mean that I need to, they would then take priority. And if I'm hungover or not feeling good and all of this other stuff is affected because of it, I'm going to then make those goals even harder to achieve. So actually having those goals, and even now I still set 10 to 15 just various types of goals throughout the year to try and be that underpinning of, well, I need to stay sober. I can't be hungover because that's then gonna, I'm not gonna want to go for that run. And then that's not gonna help me with the overall distance that I'd like to cover in 2025. So it is then, yeah, like I say, just underpinning it by putting other goals in that need me to stay that way.
Do you mind sharing a couple of those goals just to give people
Yeah.
inspiration? Because I and me, I'd like because I know when you get sober, you have this period where you focus on sobriety and that's your pure focus. And then as time goes on, you start to think, okay, what now? What next?
Yeah.
And you need other things to be working towards. And it's not that we all suddenly become marathon runners or do ice baths, but it's just
Yeah.
actually those are really quite cool things to do for your mood.
Absolutely. And it is like you said about it's that looking for natural dopamine, looking for ways of doing that. So, I mean, some of them this year are, I want to do a few different events. I've already signed up for a half marathon later this year.
Well done.
Thank you. I can't grasp it because the
It's a
10K
long way, isn't
sounds
it?
really, it is. And when you think a 10K is actually a quarter of a marathon, it's less than a quarter, isn't it? But
Yeah, well done.
So looking at last year, I covered about 250 kilometers. So I want to try and run 1,000K this year, which to some seasoned runners doesn't sound like much. I know people that have done that already, but for me, that's quite a step up.
I've never thought about doing it like that. Oh my goodness. So, like setting yourself a goal for the whole year and then just noting how far you've run. That's so
Yes.
cool.
Yeah, and I've got that at the back of the journal is like a monthly colouring boxes of how much we've done. With that, I want to learn to play chess. It was just a silly little thing in there, but it's something that I've thought about and tried before, and it just seems so daunting that actually I'm going to do that. And stepping out of my comfort zone and doing more sort of sobriety stuff that I can share with the ice baths. And when this opportunity came up, I was straight on it because, as I said at the start, that feeling of an imposter in this area. I know I'm not the only one. I'm not the only person that has noticed actually it's not a good relationship and not waited for it to get to that point. So actually, yeah, wanting to do more about that side of things, sort of reduced screen time overall,
Yeah,
reading
love that one.
75 books.
Oh, well done.
Goodreads is a great little app to use for that. But it's and I want to make sure that 30 of them are self-development rather than just easy 200-page novels that I could fly through. So there is a lot on there,
Really varied as
but
well. I
it
like
is,
results. I
yeah.
love the learning chess one.
It's yeah something that it's. I was with the girls last year. I taught them drafts, and they're like, "Oh, can we play with these pieces?" And I was like, "Okay, let's get a YouTube video up, and we'll see how to do it." And this went in, and it was a minute into this YouTube video, and me and my 9-year-old just looked at each other and went, "We'll leave that for another day."
Yeah, my 12-year-old, we watched that thing on Netflix with the girl who played chess. I can't remember the name of the show now, but she's
Okay.
a chess champion. That was like a spur when I was pregnant, actually. So I was sober and we were in lockdown, and my then 10-year-old taught herself chess, and I taught myself
Wow.
enough to be able to kind of, she always won, but
Yeah.
because all the pieces move in different directions. It's a really good goal. I love it. I love it.
It's, and there's sort of on the beach here, along the promenade, they've got like a little climbing wall, an outside gym, but they've got these little chairs and tables with chess boards on the top. And I think, do you know what? Actually, by the end of the summer, I'd quite like to just sit there and have a game of chess.
Brilliant.
And yeah, I'm not going to say I'd like to win a game of chess because I'm more realistic than that. But I'd like to know how to play it.
That's amazing. So, what's your second thing?
My second thing is sort of along that, actually. It's about the having the goals, but I see it more as living life now rather than just plodding on or treading water. And it's that, I think, I can't remember who said it, but it's about you living the same year 75 times and calling it a life. It's actually wanting to do things, wanting to progress. Like, yeah, learning to play chess might be a trivial thing, but actually, this time 2 years ago, the idea of running a half marathon would not have even entered the equation. And yeah, just having those things to keep me focused on making the most of things. You don't know what's round the corner and what's going to happen, but actually, yeah, living rather than just being alive, I think is what is just become more important over the last few years.
And that is such a good way of putting it. Living the same year 75 times and calling it a life.
Yeah.
That's powerful. I don't know where you heard that, but that really has hit me.
Yeah,
How can
because
we
it's.
change something? How can we grow a little bit or try something different?
Yeah, and I think it is, because it's the only constant in life, isn't it? Is change. And I
Yeah.
think it's, I know that looking back to 2 years ago, I'm different. 10 years ago, I wouldn't, was not in the same place at all. But just because I'm an adult now, apparently, doesn't
Yeah,
mean I
don't
can't
tell
stop.
anyone.
No, it's, I, no, it's a friend of mine in one of the men's groups that I'm in, brought to my attention that I'm approaching 1,000 days until my 40th birthday. And
Which means I'm approaching, I don't know how many days until my 50th. Thanks for
that's
that.
all right, you're welcome. That's just what you want on a Sunday morning. But I thought,
Thank
well,
you.
you know, and actually I thought about it and I'm like, well, I'm nowhere near as bothered about 40 as I was 30. And it's actually, I've just seen that as, you know what, as 1,000 goal, 1,000 day countdown. What can I achieve in that 1,000 days? I've got
Yeah.
another set of goals that are being chipped away at and designed now for that time. But it is, let's say, who knows? I'm not going to be, I might be doing ultra marathons by the time that 1,000 days passes by again.
Absolutely. My 40s are the healthiest, it's the healthiest decade I've had.
Yeah, and that's what I want to try and continue again. I think when I got redeployed to that care home, it was my job was to work for people or work with people that were too healthy to be at home, but not fit enough to go home. So it was, I was working within physiotherapy and rehabilitation at the time. And there was a huge disconnect you could see. And it happens at around 40, I think, for people that are physically active or that aren't. And that doesn't necessarily show up until we're in our 60s and 70s and we can't get off the floor or we need help climbing the stairs. And that was, I've taught exercise in some capacity since I was about 15. And that was a wake-up call for me. Just thinking, actually, this is really important. Not for today, not for looking good or feeling good. It's for me when I'm a pensioner, if I fall over, knowing that I can get up.
Yeah.
And I think we're at that stage now where planting the seeds, sort of making the habits real, are going to make the difference in the significant long term. But knowing that we've got the power to do that now is, so important.
It is, and I've had that sort of because I've had a hip issue. I've noticed I've sort of got a glimpse into my future self if I don't. So for me now, I'm just now looking into like Pilates, reformer Pilates, and things like that, thinking I've got to strengthen my core. It's, you know, as what alongside weight training, alongside running. This is about how do I create flexibility and strength. And I wouldn't be looking at any of these things because reformer Pilates would be an evening. There's no way I would entertain it. I'd look at it and go, what, 7 o'clock at night? You could forget that. I'm opening a bottle of wine. So
Absolutely, yeah.
it opens up a whole new world to you. But when you are thinking, and the reason I mentioned that was because of you are future-proofing a lot of the time, I think, with your health.
Yeah.
It's when you get an injury or something happened that you go, oh, actually, I really take for granted the fact that I can move without pain or stiffness, which I haven't had for the last few months. I've only just started running again, and it affected my mood.
Absolutely, yeah. It was for me that sort of 8 weeks of not running, looking at my monthly check-in of how I'm feeling physically, but mentally significantly dropped off. And it
Yeah.
was just from I'm not able to get two or three runs in a week. And it's,
Yeah.
yeah. But like you say, it's that future-proofing, it's longevity, it's vitality. It's, yeah, really good.
So, what about your third thing?
I think it is that self-awareness, and it is that not just mindlessly numbing things. And at times, it initially that probably went from alcohol to being other sources of dopamine, to eating, gaming, whatever. Just sort of now having that awareness to say, this is how I'm feeling. Why? And being able to reflect on those things. So I'm just more aware of those thoughts and feelings now, which is something a few years ago might have just been, I should have a drink. I feel like I need a drink today, and not probing any further into why that may be. And it's not easy. It's not easier by any stretch. But the way you feel for days afterwards is significantly better.
Yeah.
Like I said, with the journaling earlier this year, it was around my birthday that I didn't journal. And then when I looked back the days afterwards, I was like, oh, actually, because there was people that I thought would have wished a happy birthday that didn't contact me. And sort of, right, that's why I didn't want to face those on the day of writing that down. I wanted to focus more on the people that did make the point of being with you and coming to see you, rather than the ones that didn't. But then I think that's the human brain, isn't it? We're more focused on the negatives rather than the positives. And it might not be an animal that threatens our life anymore, it's someone that just hurts your feelings, but it's still, you notice those a little
and
bit more.
It's still valid. It really is still valid. You know, I think sometimes we'd be guilty of gaslighting ourselves. It's like, oh, for goodness sake. You know, but actually, rather than drinking on it, facing it and going, okay, I feel hurt by that.
Yeah. And it was a couple of days after when I went back into the journaling, I abandoned my normal gratitude, three words, check in. And I just wrote, sort of not thinking, just let it flow to get out and come out. And then you sort of read it back and you realize sort of how you really did feel about it.
Yeah.
And actually, looking back, probably wouldn't change anything that's led to it. But like you say, you can still feel hurt over things. But just debriefing with yourself and saying, no, the right choice is being made for the right reasons. That's just the byproduct of it.
Yeah. How did you change that self-medicating or switching, you know, the sort of switching to a different kind of dopamine addiction of gaming and things? That's the first time I've heard gaming mentioned. A lot of people will mention sugar and eating being the thing they switch to. And initially, you know, it's not, don't worry about it initially is what I say to people. You can deal
absolutely
with,
it's a lot healthier,
you know, just stop drinking at the moment, and then, you know, you can always address it. So how did you notice that the other things have then become, oh, I'm doing this more now and this doesn't feel healthy?
It's difficult because it wasn't probably, I didn't see it as that dopamine fix at first. I noticed actually, if it's the lockdown was really bad for it, because there wasn't a start or end to the day. I didn't have to be up in time for work, didn't have these things. So it was being able to game until late at night as if I was 14, 15 years old again. But it wasn't until I listened to Anna Lempke's Dopamine Nation audiobook that then you see actually all of these things in life can be attributed to being a dopamine fix.
It's a brilliant book.
It is. And it's sort of, you open up and see all of the things, like, and for me it was, well, actually, gaming until late at night. And then it also almost takes the part of what alcohol is doing, because I'm staying up far too late. I'm feeling almost as close as I get to feeling hungover nowadays by that overstimulation, a rubbish night's sleep, and just feeling horrendous in the morning. Is, you then start to see, actually, maybe that's what I'm doing, or maybe that's why I want to do this, because I feel this way. So,
and it can be avoidance, can't it? I know in her book, she talks about her own addiction to a particular type of fiction book.
Yes, yeah.
The kind of the, what was it? What was the name of the series? The vampire Twilight series, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Really into that genre, and then needed her fix and was almost hiding her books behind. Then she found a Kindle and she found that you didn't need to hide the cover of the book.
Yeah.
It just got worse and worse. And she was finding she was reading in between work sessions. And anything can become addictive.
Absolutely. And it is that, like you say, it's that self-medicating or self-soothing for whatever it means. And it's something like reading. Is it seen as a detrimental habit? But when you're staying up late at night and spending a fortune on books, it is. I think it does take a while to notice these apparently healthier options still class as addictive for it. And I think a couple of the Gabor Mate books as well were quite helpful for looking at why these things are occurring.
It's only you that can make the judgment, really. Like with something like, who would think that the Twilight series of books would be something that you could get addicted to? But it was that dopamine hit, that escapism, that not being in the present moment that she was getting out of it. For you, the gaming presumably was offering a similar sort of escapism.
And that is exactly how I described it, was escapism. It's been a long day. I just need to switch off and distract my brain from this. And it's,
So what would be your healthier alternative to that now? It's almost like the absolute opposite, isn't it? Is it being really present?
it is, and it's sort of finding things that you can sort of mindfully do for me rather than mindlessly do. And it's while I grew up with gaming, and there's still a part of me now, it's nowhere near as significant as what it used to be. I do like my daily walks, be it at lunchtime at work, or if I've got a chance in the evening, I like going out listening to a podcast or an audiobook. But actually, Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, it's the ironing for me. It's much as
Can you
a
move in with me, please?
It's the ridiculous judgment that people always get and they scoff at you. But actually, it's I'll put something on the telly, a sitcom on the telly, and just getting through and doing the week's worth of ironing over a couple of hours is just that switch off, that sort of mindfulness of just what you're doing, the repetitive mundanity of it is brilliant. And I've described it as meditative before to people, and it's
I get that. I really do.
Who'd have thought? I've gone sober and I love ironing. I'm sitting in buckets of cold water.
You're not selling sobriety here at this
Oh no,
point.
it's brilliant.
But it is that self-awareness. You know, you wouldn't have spotted or realized maybe that gaming was a replacement if it wasn't for all the self-awareness work that you're doing, the journaling, the noticing things, the questioning, and just thinking. So I noticed that for me, it was that my phone is always by me. It's even here now, always by me. And so after going to Rangan Chatterjee the other week, I decided that, right, okay, it's being banned from one room in the house, and that's the bedroom. And it needs to stay out of the bedroom, and I need to be able to have an old-fashioned alarm clock or some sort of alarm clock that's going to wake me up and not be looking at it first thing in the morning or last thing at night. And it's, I'm not joking, I've halved my screen time.
It's I think it was last year at some point. I can't put a date on it, but I've done similar. I bought the Sunrise alarm clock, but I actually surprisingly found it a lot easier to not have the phone in the bedroom than I thought I would.
I like it
It's,
now. Yeah.
oh, it's brilliant. I'll get into bed. It's then reading in bed's much easier, much more accessible, as silly as it sounds, because I'm not mindlessly swiping through or watching a video on YouTube
Yeah.
for 20 minutes before bed, and then getting to the point of thinking I'm too tired to read now. I'm either tired and I'll go straight to sleep, or I'll read for 20 minutes first. Yeah, it does make such a difference too. I think the quality of my sleep and how easy I fall asleep as well.
If you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice, or if you could give anyone a piece of advice that's at the start of their sobriety from your vantage point, what would you say to them?
I think for me, it was that you know why you're doing it. And it's when there was people, even I'd say even my wife was like, yeah, but you don't drink that much. Was, yeah, but I know why I'm changing that behavior. And yeah, that would be the biggest thing. Stick to it because you know why. You know your why, the reason for it. And it's, yeah, it's that nice reminder.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a rock bottom. It doesn't have to be a label.
No.
It's just if you're using alcohol for something, it's like if you're using romance novels for something, or if you're using online shopping or gaming, and it's taking over, it's the point that that starts taking your focus mentally over your other obligations, which I can certainly say alcohol did for me. That's when there's a red flag.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it is, like you say, it can be counting down till it's an appropriate time, or I think it's whatever, and it is the societal norms of, yeah, well, like you say, you've earned it.
Oh, Will, it has been so lovely to chat to you. It's been so lovely to see you.
Thank
I'm
you.
so sorry that I didn't see you in London when we were doing the 10K together.
But you never know, maybe at one of the marathons in the future.
Oh, yeah. I'll come and cheer you on. I always
Okay,
joke like this and I go, yeah, I'm not doing that. And then the next thing you know, Louise is looking for dopamine.
signed up to an ultra marathon around the North Pole.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's been so lovely to chat, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like any support with your sobriety, then please reach out. You can visit my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll be able to send me a message, and you can look at some of the things I've put together to help you. There are links to my Dry January podcast, my audiobook on Audible. As a clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a therapist, I have created lots of different hypnotherapy recordings that you can listen to help you on any subject. You'll find those on the website too, alongside my Sober Resilience course. As a listener of the show, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on any hypnosis or relaxation recording. I really hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Until next time.